Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, January 6, 2014, and once again, I am at CES, the International Consumer Electronics Show, with Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
It's awesome that you're here. Also, Dave Hamilton. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Fun stuff.
It is fun, and it's great that we're getting to hang out here at CES and check out all the cool stuff that's happening this year, especially because so far we've been able to see products that will actually ship and aren't vaporware.
I think that will change when we hit the actual show floor today, but the pre-event stuff, typically vaporware is not part of the formula there.
So. Which is really nice. I like seeing things that we'll actually be able to get our hands on in the store at some point.
Yeah, some of which are like ready now, which is good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So, did you see anything cool?
I saw quite a few cool things. So, you and I did go to, and now I am going to probably talk about vaporware, but hopefully not. You and I, Jeff, went to the Showstoppers Launch It event.
Right.
Which features, I think, eight of the what they deem to be the best companies that are exhibiting in the Eureka Park section here, which is where the really early stage startups are. And these people all got to pitch for 5 minutes to a group of angel investors, not for the purpose of getting funding, though there's no one stopping those angels from deciding to or not to fund them. But the angels then evaluated each of these companies based on their investability after these short presentations. And so there were some cool things that we saw there. And one of them I thought was very interesting and clever. A company called Hush makes what are called smart earplugs. And these are earplugs that block out 70 dB, which is a massive amount. In this room where we're doing this, we're probably talking at probably about 60 dB right now. But things can get up to like 85, in a noisy environment. But most earplugs are going to block out, 30, 35. These block out 70, but they're Bluetooth. They pair with your smartphone. And so any sounds that you wish to have be heard while you're wearing your earplugs, like your alarm or an important call that comes in, if you set the caller to be able to bypass do not disturb or whatever, comes right through the earplugs because they're actually Bluetooth headphones, battery powered, that are in your ears while you're sleeping. So it's a clever idea,
and it looked really cool.
Yeah. Hush.
I do want to try those when they come out.
Totally. Yeah. They say they've really worked on the comfort while sleeping thing because that's probably going to be their biggest issue. The rest of the tech is all right there, but they seem like a good team. So, yeah,
they did, and they made a good presentation.
They did.
Yeah, yeah. On the sound thing, this wasn't at that little pitch event. This was later on in the evening. I came across a company called FreeWaves, and they're making Bluetooth headphones for sport activities that have biosensors built into the ears. And so you get good stereo audio quality, plus you can track your heart rate and your blood pressure and your temperature and get your step counts. And it's basically like sticking a Fitbit in your ear, but more comfortable.
Right.
And that is what they had last night was one of the final prototypes, and production is ramping up. And so in a couple months, those will be out. And it was really cool. And I love the idea of having totally wireless connectivity for my fitness activities, like if I'm out running or hiking. And I also liked that you could control the audio for each earpiece independently.
So if you were, say, running or cycling, you could actually shut down the audio for one of the ears.
Right.
And hear traffic noises or ambient noises, whatever
right.
those might be.
Right, right. And if you are doing something where, say, you're with someone else and you want to share your audio, give them one of your smart earbuds. And now they can just stick that in their ear. And as long as they stay within a Bluetooth range,
right.
they've got your audio too.
So I want to – I feel like it's important because I think this is going to come up over and over again. So I want to take us on a slightly geeky tangent for the first time this show, this episode rather. We've done this before. And talk about a piece of Bluetooth audio technology called APTX. I started hearing a lot of people last night talk about it. What happens with Bluetooth audio, and this has gotten better, is the data needs to be compressed in order to be sent across the bandwidth that's available for Bluetooth, okay? And what that means is you are sacrificing some audio quality in the process. They've done a good job. Even 5 years ago, they were doing a good job at getting audio across. And part of the reason, and this existed 5 years ago, is this technology called APTX, where the audio is compressed not quite losslessly, but it's a very powerful and very high quality compression engine that many Bluetooth devices support. Your Mac supports it. My 2007 Mac supports it. Most high quality earphones support APTX, and it makes a huge difference. Like the Audio Engine B1 supports APTX. That's a Bluetooth receiver for your stereo. There are, however, devices that many of us use every day that do not support APTX, and often they are the devices that we are using with all of these high quality Bluetooth headphones and speakers, and that is your iPhone. Does not support APTX, not even the iPhone 6 Plus. So maybe an iPhone 7 or an iPhone 8 will someday, but at the moment, you have none of the, if you are being sold on a pair of Bluetooth headphones or some kind of speaker and APTX is touted, that's a great thing. Just do not expect to get the benefits of that quality from your iPhone.
Are you finding APTX on any Android devices?
Oh, yeah.
So Apple is kind of lagging on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Just wanted to.
Which is weird because it's on their computers. Like I said, my 2007 iMac happily beams audio APTX.
Is this a left hand not talking to the right hand thing?
That's probably a power thing.
Probably a power thing.
Yeah. My guess is that the codec to compress it is, you know, CPU intensive.
Sure.
So they've decided it's not important. To be fair, I've gotten great Bluetooth audio from my iPhones. So it's not a deal killer. I just want to make sure people are aware. That's all.
That makes sense.
Yep. That's it.
That does kind of suck, though. But there you go.
Yeah.
Brian, did you find anything cool yet?
Yeah. I think one of the coolest things I saw, although, you know, the caveat is that listening to any kind of speaker on any kind of show floor is just about worthless for truly judging its quality. But the Phantom Implosion Sound Center was very, very impressive on the noisy show floor at the Pepcom event last night. This is a self-contained speaker system that has subwoofer, mids, highs, and it communicates with up to 24 of itself. So you can have one of them playing the music, or you can have two of them playing the music, or you can have 24 of them playing the music. And it transmits the sound via Wi-Fi, and it sounded remarkably good on the show floor. I actually have an Instagram video where the iPhone captured some pretty good sound on it. If you want to see why it's cool and how cool it looks, and a little bit of how good it sounded. It was interesting. $199. It's from this French company called Phantom, and I think it's shipping now.
Very cool, Dave.
Well, I was just going to tag on to Brian's thing. All of us are posting a lot of these things to Instagram, and all of that is being reposted to the Mac Observer Twitter account and Facebook group. So follow us there, and in real time, you will get these updates from us from the show floor.
And one of the videos that you'll be able to see is of Dave on this thing called the Smart Wheels. And think of a Segway without the stick to hold on to. That's kind of how to visualize it. And so it's just a little platform you stand on with two wheels, and you drive around on it.
Pretty much. Yeah, Jeff, you and I both got to test this thing out. It is a Segway with no wheels, except it's not a Segway. It certainly functions in a way that it draws the comparisons. There are some fundamental differences, obviously, in the technology used.
Right.
But the battery, they say, lasts 10 to 12 miles, depending on terrain, which is not fantastic. But the thing only weighs, what, 22 pounds?
Right.
And So you could pack this, and it's small enough. You could pack this in, certainly in your carry-on luggage. You could easily pack it in your stowaway luggage, but you got to worry about weight at that point. But easy to use. Jeff and I, neither one of us had any trouble getting up on the thing. The video you'll see is about a second and a half into my very first time on this thing. And I was moving carefully, slowly, because there were a lot of people around. But I had no trouble moving around. It was cool. $1,200, right? So a third the price of a Segway, and portable. It's great. There's been other things like this too here. It's cool to see the kind of personal mobility, if that's the right category.
Now, if someone wanted to see, because there's also a video of Jeff on one
of the scenes. That's right.
A video of both of you. Now, if they were going to go to the Mac Observer Twitter account, where would they go?
Twitter.com/MacObserver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You could just follow us right there.
You could follow us right there.
That's fantastic.
That's right. That's right.
I took a look at the HP displays that were introduced yesterday. They've got a 4K display, a 5K display for $1,299, mind you. And what's Apple's Thunderbolt display still? $999?
That's not 5K.
No, it's not 5K. It is not 5K.
No way.
Yeah, but it's $999. For $300 more, you can get this HP 5K display. I'm not actually sure which Macs yet will support it. It uses two mini display ports.
Will any Mac support it?
Some Macs will support it.
Okay. Okay.
They're actually getting back to me on this.
Okay.
This is why I'm putting it this way. That display is not attractive, but the form factor is not attractive, but the image was remarkable. But they also had their curved display that they introduced yesterday. That thing was sexy. And it's like 3,400 by like 1,280.
What's the price point on their curved display?
$1,500-ish.
Seriously?
Yeah, plus or minus.
Oh, I might buy one of those.
Yeah, it might have been $1,799, but it wasn't over two. I forget. I apologize, folks. I can't remember the exact price.
It, in short range like that, I can totally see where the curved display would be beneficial.
It is nice.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
It is really nice, and their prices are really, really compelling. $1,299 for a 5K display?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Dell's charging twice that. And like I said, Apple for the Thunderbolt display is...
But it has Thunderbolt, Brian.
It's true. It does. It does have Thunderbolt, and that's a thing.
And it uses up one of your Thunderbolt ports to do so. But
yeah.
so would any other display.
So would any other.
Because you're going
out
many display
port.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, HP is doing some interesting things with the display stuff.
Very cool. Can I hijack us again and talk a little bit technically here? Because I think it's kind of important to talk about a piece of news that,
sure.
that came to light this week.
We typically don't talk tech, but since you're here, Dave.
Yeah, I know.
We ought to.
So I want to talk about Gogo, the in-flight wireless company, because I got a chance to talk to them a little bit last night at Pepcom, and they told me about – I learned some things, right? So first of all, currently Gogo's planes, the entire plane – gets 9.8 megabits a second worth of data.
Can you actually back up and tell us exactly what Gogo does?
Sure. When you're on an airplane and they have Wi-Fi, it's probably coming from Gogo. And it's satellite-based. They figured this out years ago, and it works. It works great. But the entire plane gets 9.8 megabits a second. Most of us at home have at least double that. Probably, at home for me, without really paying any extra, I have 10 times that. So when you're sharing that amongst the whole plane, you have to be very careful about what you allow and not allow people to do. And streaming video is something that initially they decided right off the bat, we can't let people do this. Because if one person streaming video, that's going to take about a meg a second, even for a relatively high quality video. That's not going to work. If we have more than 10 people that want to stream a movie on the plane, no one gets to watch the movie. So they've done some things to filter that out. And one of the things that sort of broke their filters was when Google started forcing all YouTube traffic to be encrypted. That is, when you go to YouTube.com, even if you visited http://YouTube.com/YouTube.com, it automatically redirects you to the secure site, https://YouTube.com. That's a good thing. The more of the web that is secured, the better. It's encrypted data. It's a good thing. You're going to actually log in. That's even better. But it means that filtering the traffic that's actually being sent over that link is very difficult because it's encrypted. to solve that problem, GoGo made an interesting decision. From an in-the-lab technical standpoint, it's actually quite brilliant, except that what they did was they said, if we issue our own security certificate, because we control the entire widget that appears to be a Google certificate, then we can actually peek inside the encrypted data that goes back and forth and make sure that we're still blocking the streaming stuff. And it solves the problem of 9.8 megabits a second for the entire plane and nobody screwing it up. With the exception...
That sounds an awful lot like a man-in-the-middle attack
to
me.
It's exactly what a man-in-the-middle attack is.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It solved the problem. And I feel like... I mean, we can't go back in history, but I feel like if at the time that they had to do this, they looked for another solution, like talking to Google and having Google maybe flag the traffic in a way that they can see it. Because there are things you can do to TCP packets to give them some characteristics. Google probably wouldn't have even answered the phone, right? This is some little company. We need you to change the way you work entirely just because of us, and we don't even know if we're going to survive, right? Google probably said no. So they hacked it. They came up with their own way. What they forgot to do was put a tickler on the calendar that says, hey, 6 months from now, let's revisit this and see if we can come up with a better solution. And if the answer is, well, it's still no. All right, well, kick the can down the road, but don't forget the can is there. And it was a Google engineer, I think, that was traveling on a flight that figured this out just last week. But now I think that will force the conversation between or allow the conversation between Google and GoGo to happen and probably solve it the right way. And that's a good thing. But I just wanted people to understand what this was all about. It's a bad thing that they did this. But it was obvious to me immediately why they did it, and when I talked to them, they confirmed all of my suspicions. But
well, I think part of the outrage, though, Dave, about GoGo concerns some of the revelations in the past about cooperating with government and right. and unknown third parties about the traffic that's going through their system.
Right.
And so that adds with this man in the middle attack, that sort of adds a lot of emotional baggage.
Absolutely.
To this particular conversation.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and even without that, this is not okay. But it's understandable. And I say that as a geek. I don't know that there would have been another way for them to solve that initially.
Fair enough.
So just wanted to explain it for those of you watching along at home.
And thanks for talking with GoGo and finding out what they're really doing, or just confirming what we already knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not bad people.
No, they're not bad people. They just are bad people that had to make a poor life choice their company going.
To get their company going. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing that I saw, which I thought was interesting, and it took a minute for my head to decide, okay, this is actually kind of cool. Automatic, the company that makes the little plug-in computer thing for your car to give you diagnostics, they have teamed up with Nest. Not like the companies are the same now, but they're collaborating. And so what they've done is they've added in new software. So everyone that already has an Automatic and a Nest can take advantage of this. No upgrades or anything. It's just there for you. And so what it does is the Automatic is monitoring your location. And so it will tell your Nest when you've left to go to work and when you're leaving work to come home, and it will give your Nest continuous updates on your ETA so that your Nest will turn the temperature on when you get close. And on one hand, okay, we already have iPhones, so we can do that. But what if we can offload that from our iPhone, save a little bit of power, and put that into the car, because it's the car that really needs to tell the Nest where it is. And so I thought, okay, that's kind of a cool idea for people that are looking for a way to offload some of that that extra geolocation stuff from their iPhone.
Actually, I'm not convinced that it offloads the geolocation stuff from your iPhone. Your phone is what's doing the geolocation for the Automatic.
Oh, well, they were very clever in the way they explained it to me.
Yeah.
So in that case, this is suddenly just not cool to me at all.
Well, it's an app that you will have running while you're in the car tracking your location. So in order to do this with Nest without Automatic, you would need to be running some other app that's constantly monitoring your location.
Like If This Then That.
Well, If This Then That doesn't monitor your location, but you can feed it with data from something else that does. So no matter what engine you're using, your phone needs to monitor your location. The automatic doesn't have a GPS circuit in it. It has a Bluetooth circuit that talks to your phone, and the two paired together make this wonderful. It's actually a wonderful device. But if you are an automatic user, you have this app running while you're in the car. It's no more power used. So this is probably where their explanation came from. It's no more power used to do this than it would have been to just do the automatic thing.
Okay. Yeah. They didn't make that clear. Yeah. Okay,
but so, it's still a good idea. I mean, it's leveraging something you're already doing to do more, which is cool.
And it takes out the complexity that would come with yet another app to help with this.
Totally.
Okay, so now I'll slide back a little bit from I started with this is really cool, jump to this is stupid, back to all right, I can see the value in this.
We have time for one more thing?
Sure.
So I'm noting there were at the Bluetooth event that we went, there was a little tiny Bluetooth centric show, and there were lots of plugs, smart plugs. Things that you plug into your wall socket and then plug other things into so you can then control that power outlet from your iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the products looked a little more developed, a little more interesting than others. But what struck me as the most interesting is that we are clearly making another step down this path towards truly smart homes, right? You know, these are all iterative steps. It's kind of like that luggage lock that you were so unhappy about yesterday, right? There's this luggage lock that this company is looking to work with luggage manufacturers to embed in their luggage, and it's not there,
right?
So Dave is saying it's not there. But what I found interesting about it is that it's this iterative step. Like, what's going to come next could be a lot more interesting. And we're already seeing interesting things with plugs. There was a company called Emberlight that had a light bulb socket that you screw into another light bulb socket and screw any light bulb you want into that, and it becomes a smart bulb, right, for good or for ill. So there's these iterative steps that we're seeing, I think, are taking us towards a more and more interesting place.
I agree. Jeff, and I'm going to add one to your one because it's totally part of this and probably further down the step at that – that launch it event. So early stage stuff was a company that's actually in the market called Smart Bee, and it is a Wi-Fi powered switch that it's a replacement switch that you put on your wall. And whatever that switch controlled is now controllable via your, your phone and your home network and all of that stuff. And the cool part is because you've got phased power in the wall, this thing requires no batteries, nothing. It is on all the time, unless you lose power in your house, which is, you know, an issue for me. But otherwise, it just works. And again, like you said, I mean, it takes 12 minutes to install, right? And so you can do a whole home in an hour and a half kind of thing. So that you're right. Yeah, it's interesting where this retrofitting kind of thing that really is going to provide some functionality.
Like houses that are going to be designed and built in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years,
yeah,
are going to be in some ways science fiction compared to what we thought of as housing for the last 120 years.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We are out of time now. So, Dave, thank you. Or Brian, or whoever has a microphone.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Yeah. And Brian, thank you, too.
Thanks for having me, too.
And check out our articles from CES at MacObserver.com. You can follow along in real time with the things that we're seeing at MacObserver, which is our Twitter account. And we will have more CES news for you tomorrow. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll see you tomorrow.